Good morning, everybody. It's Larry Jacobs here with a cold. I might add, you might be able to hear that in my voice, so I apologize for that right off the bat. Okay, this is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio, and it is September 24th, 2020. And, you know, it's cold season. What can I tell you? I did have my flu shot a couple of days ago, but I do have a cold. All right, so bear with me. We have a wonderful show on our favorite guest, returning guest, Dr. Howie Knopf, who's the president of the school consulting firm called Project Achieve. He's past president of National Association of School Psychologists and just an all-around great guy. He writes for us in the magazine as well, which I'll explain in a second. But we're going to talk about differentiating between student stress and pandemic trauma. All right, I'm just going to introduce it that way because I personally don't know the difference, but he does, okay? And you have to know it, all right? He'll tell you why you have to know it, because a lot of this has to do with social, emotional, behavioral needs, etc., as we swing back into the weirdest school year ever. And I know you're all doing a great job out there, but we've got new challenges, and how we will somehow help us get through that a little bit. We archive this show, and we archive them now through our ace-ed.org website, ace-ed.org. That's our American Consortium for Equity in Education. They're all the same company, Education Talk Radio and ace-ed.org, and we wanted to put the two together, consolidate them a little more. So if you go over to ace-ed.org, you'll see an icon for Education Talk Radio podcast. Click through on that, and that will bring you over to our schedule and all that sort of stuff and all our archive shows, etc. Again, over at ace-ed.org. While you're there, join our consortium, free to pre-K-12 educators, and of course our magazine, our online journal, which Howie writes for from time to time, excellent articles, okay, and I think he's got one in this issue, to tell you the truth. I don't remember offhand, to get mixed up between the issues, but at any rate, the back-to-school issue is up there. It's at ace-ed.org. Everything we do over there is free for K-12 educators. It's an industry-supported consortium. God bless the industry for doing what they do. We're trying to bring the thought leaders of the industry and the thought leaders out of the trenches like you folks together, okay, and come up with some solutions for equity and make sure everybody has the same and equal access to learning that everybody needs. ace-ed.org. Join with us, okay, over at the consortium. Okay, this will stop spinning in a second. It just did. There's the one and only Howie Knopf. Hello, Dr. Knopf. It's Dr. Jacobs here.
Well, good morning, Larry. Sorry you're feeling a little under the weather.
Yeah, I feel fine, actually. I just have a cold. It's enough to make you crazy. I'm like, I got snuffles. You know, it's all over my head. What can I live in Maine. I deserve it, you know. What can I tell you? Right, so how you doing?
I'm good. Still in Arkansas. Haven't left the house. Haven't taken a plane in 6 months, which is just bizarre.
Of us. But, just stay,
you know,
that way.
Yep,
stay that
still
way.
Still busy. Yeah, as busy as usual, working with schools all over the world. Just did a teleconference last week with an education group in Dubai, so I can't complain.
Don't complain at all. And we are all stuck in. It's a brave new world. Some of the teachers are back at school, obviously, because some of the kids are back at school, up to the parents, et cetera, et cetera. It was a nice segue into what we're going to be talking about today. Student stress versus pandemic trauma. And I don't know if every kid has this all the time. I'm going to ask you right off the bat, differentiating between student stress and pandemic trauma. What's that about, Howie?
Well, I mean, really where this initiated is, you know, we've got the popular press. We've got people who are working who, you know, let's just say they dabble in psychology. And kind of the party line is that we've got all of these kids who are coming to school traumatized by the pandemic. And I've got to be careful right at the beginning here, Larry. I don't want to undermine or undercut. There are absolutely children, adolescents, adults who have been traumatized by, you know, the pandemic. But from a clinical perspective, we've got to do some differentiation. So right at the outset, let me give you the clinical definition of trauma, all right? And then we'll talk, and then I'll contrast it with stress, all right? So this is from, you know, this is a combination of the U.S. Office of Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration and the American Psychiatric Association. So this is an integrated definition. Individual trauma results through an event, a series of events, or a set of experiential circumstances, from exposure to actual or threatened death, serious injury, or sexual violence. Okay, it's a very narrow definition. And
that
it
is.
It talks that trauma, it has lasting adverse effects on the individual's functioning, physical, social, emotional, or spiritual well-being. So it's a very narrow clinical definition. And the concern is that, as the popular press is predicting, just like with the academic slide for the pandemic, they're predicting all these traumatized kids. Even if there were a number or a lot of traumatized kids, the question is, who are the kids who are traumatized? Have we validated clinically that they are traumatized, and because of the pandemic, and then what are we going to do about it? And my premise ultimately is, I mean, in fact, the facts are, there are more kids in school that are stressed out than are clinically traumatized.
I get it.
The point.
Yep.
Okay, so let me ask you this.
Wait a minute. They're stressed out. Are they stressed out because of the, in this case, because of the changes of what they're used to that the pandemic has caused? Is that why they're stressed? Or are we going to get into that?
It could be. But let's talk about the other stressors in kids' lives without the pandemic, pre-pandemic.
Okay. Yeah. Go ahead.
Okay. Kids are stressed out what? Because of academic frustration and failure. Homework and tests, boyfriends and girlfriends and peer relationships, teasing and bullying, gender issues, racial and cultural prejudice and discrimination issues, poverty, homelessness, school insecurity, I mean, we had stressors. I mean, we know right now, and we've known for the past 25 years, that between 25 and 40% of all kids during their school age years have a social emotional issue of such import that they need some kind of services and supports. Okay, that's pre-pandemic.
Yeah.
So we've got to talk about, if the kids are stressed out, we even have to figure out, well, where is the root cause of the stress so that we can treat it. But then, going backwards, we've got to differentiate the stress versus kids who have been traumatized by the pandemic. Right?
I couldn't agree with you more, and that's actually it's something really to think about, because we are lumping everything together under this pandemic umbrella, okay?
Right.
And it is causing – but I must ask – I'm going to ask you now, and you might want to talk about this later, but let me ask. Black folks and Latino folks have been much more targeted by the virus, all right?
Yes.
Can't answer exactly why, but that unfortunately is the case for them. Okay, are we more likely to see African American? I'll say students of color. Put them both kind of together. Students of color traumatized than we are to see the Caucasian kid, a non-color person.
You know, I mean, it's possible. I mean, I would rather wait for the data to come in. But again, let's understand pre-pandemic that students of color had a higher percentage of mental health issues and have a higher degree of stressors. And again, we always have that covariance with poverty. So how much of it is poverty, how much of it is students of color, or the fact that students of color more often than not live in poverty? So,
why do we have to know what's causing their problem? And you have a reason for wanting to know, okay? Why do we have to know what the problem, what it is if they're stressed out or traumatized? Does it matter what the, And again, I'm no psychologist, so I've got to ask these questions,
All right, so Larry, you've got a cold right now, and maybe the cold creeps into your respiratory system. All right, so do you have COVID-19? Yeah.
Go ahead. It's a good example.
Okay.
Go ahead. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Do you have COVID-19 right now, or do you just have a cold?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. See, the symptoms have to be, you have to determine from the symptoms what the underlying problem is in order to do the medical intervention. If I treat you as a COVID patient right now and you have something else, then the treatment's not going to work and your system and your medical issue may become exacerbated. Okay? So if a child comes into school or adolescent comes into school, and again, we've got to look at the early warning signs because many times the symptoms look the same. But right now what's happening is our teachers, my fear is they've heard so much, these kids are going to be traumatized by COVID-19 immediately jump to a conclusion that, oh my God, this student is traumatized by COVID-19. I wonder what's going on at home. They may overreact or they may diagnose, if you will, incorrectly. And so the bias is already out there. There's a bias out there that we're going to have an academic slump of kids because of COVID-19. Well, if we don't look at the data pre-pandemic, maybe some of those kids already had an academic slide, and we just missed it. So we've got to validate through data. We've got to use the science to get to the practice. And in the back end, to answer your question, sometimes the clinical, the psychological treatments of stress as opposed to trauma are different. So
Howie, you know this, and I actually use some of the school districts. You don't have to name them, obviously, that you work with.
Sure.
And you do work with a lot of them. If you want to name them, you can. It's up to you. Okay. But when you talk to your superintendents and the counselors that you work with, what are they telling you? And whoever they may be are just random school districts. They work with you. What are you hearing up there?
Yeah, a lot of them.
Something you heard must have caused you to think deeply about this subject.
Well, you know, I'll tell you the origins of the thinking. The origins, and not to be critical, but to critique. I mean, the origin of this started back in, it was probably April or May. It was May, actually. And there was an article by a good colleague of mine who happens to be the executive director of the National Association of School Psychologists. And she wrote an article for Ed Week. And it was about, you know, about the social-emotional status of kids and what we need to do from a preventative perspective and how we need to utilize our mental health resources. But when I read the article, what struck me was the title, the headline of the article, because the headline was over the top. You know, it was basically saying that we're expecting all of this pandemic trauma. And so I emailed my colleague, and I said, great article, where'd the headline come from? And what she told me, Larry, was that Ed Week wrote the headline. She didn't write the headline. Ed Week wrote the headline.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes what's happening, in order to call attention to certain articles, what the media does is they sensationalize. But here they're sensationalizing in a way that's creating some of the bias that we just already talked about for our classroom teachers and our administrators. They're not psychologists. But the
no,
thing
they
is,
are not.
If they're, right. But if they're anticipating, they've been kind of, you know, put on the edge of looking at kids from a social-emotional perspective, and now they've been told that there's going to be this pandemic trauma, they start connecting dots where the dots are squares and they don't connect.
Right. Are you saying, Howie, that this becomes, if I may, a self-fulfilling prophecy?
The potential is there. Absolutely. Yes.
Really so. It's really so. I mean, you got kids with challenges anyway. Okay, you got that's how we mentioned before the student stress and all that. All right,
sure.
So let me ask this question again. There's going to, let's just say it this way, there's going to be more stress or more trauma. There's going to be more something. This is going to manifest itself in some way, we think. Okay, we're not sure. Kids can be pretty resilient. Okay,
right.
That's actually the point, is the data. We don't have the data. We don't know that yet. It's a good excuse to say the kids didn't learn anything, but maybe. You know, we're blaming it on one thing and not the other. So are schools able, again, you work with a lot of districts, are they staffing up, understanding this, are they staffing up with more counselors, more psychologists, et cetera, et cetera?
No, they're not. But again, it's not that all is lost. On the front end, we've got to do for social-emotional what we've always done. We just have to add in the potential of the pandemic being one of the social-emotional triggers. So we've got to build the relationships with kids. We've got to make sure our teachers are able to see the behavioral, the social-emotional warning signs that something may be a concern. We've got to make sure that our schools have the mental health folks in their multidisciplinary teams who are available to consult and sometimes to assess to determine, you know, is this student just experiencing some, you know, passing stressors, or is this a stress that needs to be addressed in a clinical way, or is this a trauma that needs to be assessed in a different way? And we haven't even talked, and we're not going to, Larry, but, you know, we've got comorbidity with anxiety, with fear.
Yeah.
With, okay, so there's all sorts of, you know, there are other comorbid kind of situations. But, you know, there's got to be that line of thinking and processing and mental health services and supports, just like there always was. But as you're saying, the problem is in many schools, either one, they don't have the staff to pull it off, or two, they're using processes, multi-tiered system of support processes that don't make either science sense or logical sense. They're following blueprints from people who have not vetted these, who don't have the experience to do this, and quite honestly, they've never done the field testing, even though they've been put in positions of power.
So how do we overcome this? I mean, we're doing this podcast. That's one way. Okay? But how do you overcome this? Okay?
Well,
what do you suggest, Howie?
We use this
And let me throw a suggestion out there.
Sure.
I know that schools, all right, first of all, they can hire Howie at Project Achieve, and he'll be able to help you. Let me say that, okay? B, I know schools can't just go out and willy-nilly hire 100 more counselors and 10 more school psychologists. They just can't do that, okay? But there's all these companies out there with teletherapy and all that have licensed clinicians that can add to the staffing. Are you finding they're doing that, hiring you, and you can only work with so many districts, you're one person, okay? Or are you doing more with the teletherapy, et cetera? Somebody, you got to throw a professional into the mix here.
You know, and honestly, some of the systems are going the teletherapy route, and I don't have any issue with that. Right, but here's the issue. The issue is that more often than not, the teletherapy people are not doing the differential diagnostic assessments to determine if they're getting the right clients or they're matching the right clients up. Okay, Larry, you've got a cold. Okay, I've got to send you to a doctor who knows about colds.
Yeah, don't
okay,
send me to a proctologist. Don't send
exactly,
me to a proctologist.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I was going to be a little nicer. I was going to send
you
to a podiatrist.
Proctology is a legitimate profession.
Okay.
Yeah,
yeah. No, I was going to send you to a foot doctor. Okay.
Oh, thank you. Okay.
Yeah. My point is that if I send you to a foot doctor who has a medical degree, are you going to get the services and the diagnostic assessments that you need? No. So the point is that there's got to be the differential diagnosis so that we match up, if we have to go the teletherapy route, we match up the right people with the right. And then there are some clinical entities, Larry, that it's really got to be face-to-face, that the teletherapy is not going to work or the student is not going to benefit. Another student might benefit from the teletherapy,
but
some
this one
students
might not.
Don't. Exactly.
Yeah,
and
of course, people meeting less face-to-face, but I got to ask you this then, Howie. Where are these diagnostic tools? How do you diagnose it? That's what you're really bottom lining here. You got to diagnose what's going on. How do we do that in the school?
Those are the psychologists. But let me go back to your question a couple of minutes ago. So how do we do this? All right. We take this pandemic as an opportunity to look at ourselves. And I know the administrators and they're good friends. I work with hundreds of them. You know, on Zoom calls, and I work with many school districts, 3-5 years. I'm doing this right now with about 7 different districts, okay? But we use this opportunity when we get a little bit of a pause, or, you know, they take people like me, and we do an assessment. We do a needs assessment, a current status analysis of what the system, the district and the schools are doing in the social, emotional, and behavioral area. I just did one of these for a school district just across the river from Philadelphia in New Jersey. Okay.
Okay.
And we did the needs assessment. We had Zoom calls with representatives from all of the different, you know, layers of the school. We talked about where they wanted to go in terms of social emotional learning and so on. So the point is, we take this pandemic as an opportunity to look at our current system in a broad sense, in terms of social emotional behavioral needs of all kids.
I like that.
But also in a narrow sense, in terms of anxiety, stress, suicide prevention, trauma, and so on. And we use this year to redesign the system so that hopefully when we get out from under the pandemic a year from now in August, we'll have the infrastructure ready to implement a better system so that we'll be better at addressing these needs. But again, it's a prevention, assessment, strategic intervention, and intensive intervention system. It's just like your medical system in a community, okay? So sometimes you're able to do some things at home with your pharmacist. You're able to do a telehealth consult. But sometimes you've got to go to your doctor. Sometimes you have to go to a specialist. So how do we create the systems that have those multi-tiered? But again, some of it also is looking past just the school districts, because in Maine, you've got little school districts all over the place. So sometimes we have to look at a regional level. So what does one school district have that the neighboring school district doesn't have? And can we do some horse trading and align some of the services and supports together to maximize the outcomes? So you've got to look from a systems perspective, but you've got to design or redesign the system. Because right now, a lot of the system, because of this popular press notion, is being pushed to trauma, but is being pushed to trauma-informed or trauma-sensitive schools. And this is a critical point. Okay.
It is. And you're right. I mean, and those headlines, I'll use that headline, is written by someone who's not a psychologist. Okay, so the headline wants to garner eyeballs on it, et cetera, we've got to make sure we're going down the right path. I want to say something else. You mentioned, and I believe this, okay, you said that the pandemic creates an opportunity, and this pandemic is a horror show, okay? You can go right down the whole list. It is a horror show, all right? But the fact of the matter is it opened up these doors, okay, that we're able to see. All right, and be able to fix it. And if you can use this pandemic year, okay, as an opportunity to change the system, because we know these things are going to continue, okay?
Right.
It's good for that. You just said you're talking to 7 school districts or so right now, which is great. Okay, what's their reaction to this? Do they get this? Do they understand that this is what they have to do?
Honestly, Larry, they understand that they have to. They understand that they have to do it, but right now priorities are taking priority, and so even though they're aware of the kids' social emotional needs, and for some of the kids are wearing it on their sleeves. Now, they're more consumed right now with dealing with getting kids in, being healthy, being medically safe, being COVID safe. With distance, I mean they're so with the academics, and they're so consumed with other issues. I'm not saying it's not on their radar, but on their day to day, week to week radar, they're aware of it on an individual student level and less on a collective whole group level.
And you bring up something interesting. And by the way, when we're talking about mental health, we are talking about student health.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, if they're concerned about student health, this is student health that we're talking about. I want to make sure I say that so everybody understands that. Howie, on a regional note, okay, and I can ask them because I know them. I work a lot with a group called AESA, which is the Association of Educational Service Agencies,
mm-hmm.
and these are in about 47 states. You know what they are? If I use that term.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Larry, again, you don't remember remember, I worked for 13 years as the director of the State Personnel Development Grant. I was in charge of school improvement and multi-tier.
So you know
services.
ESAs. You know ESAs.
Right.
I just didn't want to use a term that you weren't familiar with.
Sometimes
we get mushed up in the initials and everything.
I was 13 years at the Department of Education in Arkansas, and we had 15 cooperatives across the
state
of Arkansas.
There you go.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's take – I want to take that. I want to jump on that for a second. I work with AESA, which is the national group, okay, and I'm always interviewing the folks in the various ESAs. All right. Again, folks, educational service agencies, they're called RSUs. They're called they're called BOCES in New York.
BOCES,
they're called co-ops, whatever.
Intermediate units.
Exactly.
In Iowa. Yeah.
SAUs, you can go right down the list, but the generic term is ESA, Ed Service Agency. Howie, are they doing a job to supply the mental health needs? Okay, and you talked about school districts working together. Okay, well, one has this, one has that, et cetera, but that could be a great role for an ESA. And I'm curious, especially now that I know exactly what they are, what's the word on that? Do you have any idea?
They're doing it to the degree that they have the personnel to do it and that the personnel are, quote, allowed to do it, okay? So, I mean, some of these AEAs and SAUs and so on, they don't employ school psychologists or clinical social workers
or but maybe they should.
Maybe they should
be the ones who should, yeah.
Right, but then they also, if they employ them, this has got to be part of their job description, because a lot of times the school psychologists, for example, that are employed by these intermediate units, they have a narrow, usually, special education role. So unless their role allows them to be able to look at the broad view of their geographic area in terms of health, mental health, and wellness, they could be there but not be allowed to do it.
I hope they think about this, because it's to me, I like them. They are a good group to me, and they do a lot of good. And this might be helpful in the answer, et cetera. I really do believe that. You know, it's just there's just so much we could do. And I asked you a question earlier. You know, and you're right. We can't cure it unless we know what it is. Is it pandemic trauma? Is it student stress, just natural, et cetera? All right? And we do have to figure that out, all right? And you said that there were diagnostics that were available or maybe have it. I don't know. Okay. Where do people get their hands on these diagnostics? Is there something that they can use?
Well, you know, and again, from a generic perspective, what a number of districts are doing is they're using social-emotional screeners. But again, you've got to use the right social-emotional screener.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Right. In the right way to be able to get useful information. But the critical point is if you're using a screener, it's just a screener. You've got to follow through with more diagnostic assessment, which then gets into your multidisciplinary team and especially your school psychologist. But see, some of the school districts, Larry, are not thinking about this. And I want to connect a few dots really quickly.
Go ahead, please do.
So with the push with, the pandemic trauma, one of the ways that people are thinking, all right, so if we've got trauma, then we have to create a trauma-informed or a trauma-sensitive school. So now our school districts are going around, and they're looking at different groups that are providing these services. And, in fact, in about 17 states, they need to do this anyways. But here's the critical point, research to practice. A study was done a year ago, July of last year. And what the authors did was, it was a research-based study. They looked at all of the research available for the last 10 years that evaluated trauma-informed programs, not practices, but programs. All right. They uncovered, once they whittled it down, they uncovered about just over 7,100 studies done over the last 10 years evaluating trauma-informed school-based programs. And then they said, all right, we need to look at only the studies that are methodologically sound. And so they generated objective ways to narrow that group of 7,100 studies down so that they could find the best scientifically evaluated programs and hence the best programs. So using reasonable, not excessive, reasonable criteria. You know how many studies out of the 7,100 they ended up evaluating?
How many?
Zero. Zero. So what does that tell us? That tells us that for all of these trauma, and I'm not saying these are not good programs. I don't know. That's the point. And I don't know which ones are good. But for all of these 7,100 studies that evaluated the efficacy of these trauma-informed programs, there wasn't a single one that did sound research. So we have no clue whether or not trauma-informed programs work. But again, that's the original premise is that we need a trauma-informed program.
Yeah.
I'm pushing and I'm saying we need a stress-informed program before we need we need a social-emotional learning preventative program. We need those programs before we need to go specializing into trauma-informed programs when we don't even know what trauma-informed programs, if any, work. But that's what our schools are doing. Right, but schools are investing money, time, training, resources, and again, they don't know what they don't know. I'm not blaming the schools. The schools assume, and they look at, you know, the trauma-informed program comes in, and it shows its portfolio, okay? But it's just like buying a new car. Here's the portfolio, and the car looks great, and then you get it off the lot, and not so much. And we've got to be judicious. We've got to be – if we're going to invest our time and resources in something, let's do it in a science-to-practice way. So I'm just – it's a note of I'm not criticizing. I'm just adding a note of caution into this process.
Well, you're not criticizing at all. I mean, you know, you're just giving these great recommendations. And as we wind down here, Howie, we are going to wind down in a few minutes. I wouldn't leave time for this. You asked me to ask you, and I do want to ask this because we're always talking, but I want recommendations. The top three or four recommendations that you think can best and really work regarding students' current social, emotional, behavioral needs. Okay? Just run down that list.
So the first one we've already
talked about.
That
they can actually do. Yeah.
Yeah. We need to take this opportunity to look at what we're doing so that we can create and sustain, hopefully, positive pro-social relationship-driven school and classroom settings and environments. So we've got to have the preventative program. We've got to come from a strength-based perspective. We've got to build the relationships. We've got to help our teachers and administrators to know the early warning signs. But again, let's focus on the positive, the pro-social skills. Let's focus on the social problem-solving skills, the conflict prevention skills, the emotional control skills. So let's do all the preventative things that a good social-emotional learning program does, and maybe, again, add in the wrinkle of looking at stress and pandemics. That's the first one. The second one we've kind of talked about, which is looking at that continuum of multidisciplinary services, support, strategies, and programs, which also includes, and now let me add on, let's reach out, if we haven't already, to the community mental health system and to our broader geography and see what social-emotional therapeutic and intervention resources we've got, because again, the schools can only do so much, but there may be professionals and practitioners out in the community who could support some of the kids who need the deeper end services and supports.
There you go.
Third point, as a generic, we've got to broaden right now, if you will, this is going to sound a little strange, we've got to broaden the definition right now of social, emotional, and behavioral, if you will, normality. Okay?
To what? Broaden it to what?
Well, I mean, I can't be terribly specific, but we've got to understand that we have all been impacted at some emotional level by the pandemic, physically by the pandemic, and so on and so forth. So the range of normality right now is broader. And so, you know, because, well, I mean, we should expect more behavioral variability in our kids right now. Because they're handling different things. And the thing is, what they're handling right now is they're being normal in an abnormal situation. They're trying to find their way, as we all are, to find some foundation, some root that we can kind of hang on to be able to deal with all of this craziness. So there's going to be more variability, and let's not start freaking out that kids are a little bit, that they're a little bit on the edges, because we're all on the edges, and sometimes.
Exactly. Our expectations of social emotional behavioral needs need to change with the times.
Yes. That's
basically what you're saying. We have to just because the little Johnny is acting out doesn't mean he's got a problem. It just means he's reacting in his own way to these crazy times. I get it.
So the last recommendation goes to my mental health colleagues. So for the counselors, the school psychologists, the clinical social workers, especially those three groups, get together in your school and district. Look at, again, what resources and skills you have to do the deeper end, the more strategic or intensive interventions. And hopefully the school district will allow these folks to maybe get some virtual training or some online training and some of the more strategic interventions related to stress, related to anxiety, related to trauma. I mean, one of the things that I'm doing with, I've got three school climate transformation grants from the U.S. Department of Education. So I'm now in year two with these districts all over the country with these grants. What we started doing back in March was we started training all of the mental health folks in these school districts, and some of them are incredibly rural districts, training the mental health folks who are employed in the school district in stress and trauma-based therapies. So that, again, if you're in a rural area and your community mental health network doesn't have the people who can provide these kind of services, and some of these services are not going to, you're not going to get the bang for the buck from a telehealth approach, then we're growing our own skills within the districts. And again, using this as an opportunity, but some of these online trainings, and yes, there needs to be clinical supervision, and the practitioners, they've got to feel comfortable that they're able to do. But that's what we're doing with this grant. We're doing basically 18 months of training, and part of it is monthly virtual supervision of our people who are learning these skills, where they're working with kids to not just practice on the kids, but to provide these services, but under supervision of our master trainer, who actually happens to be up in New Jersey. Okay, but the point that I'm making is let's take the opportunity and let's grow our skill set within the mental health specialist in the district so that we have more availability of the services when they're needed and when we connect those services to the right assessments to figure out the root causes of the problem.
Yeah, that was great. Okay, and I hope people take advantage of this and what you're saying because, we just have to do this. Okay, and I'll say, as you know, Howie and the audience, school psychologists were short of them. School counselors were short of them. Okay, and we are in stressful times. Okay, again, the kids like all of us are reacting differently to things, but we're still in stressful times.
Right,
okay.
Right.
And we just got to make this happen. Howie, as always, this is just great. We love your writing in the magazine. You got our number one article. Remember Maya called you last week
or wrote you last week? Yeah.
You got our number one article up at ace-ed.org. Everybody loves it. And I'll tell you, Howie, I really appreciate you being here. I really do. Your words are good, my friend from Arkansas.
All right. Well, let me finish and just invite
of
your listeners. No, that's okay. Let me invite your listeners. If anyone out there, if you've got a school team or a district team and you want to talk more about this with me, I always provide a free one-hour consultation to any team that wants to kind of throw some ideas around, sort some things out, or just fire some more questions like you do, Larry, at me, and I'll give them the best expertise that I can give them, and then they can decide where they want to go. So a free one-hour consultation hour for
pretty
anyone
nice.
That wants to set it up with me.
That's pretty good. And Howie, how do they reach you at projectachieve.com?
It's www.projectachieve.info, I-N-F-O, or .net. And they can get my email from there, or they can just email me at nothprojectachieve@earthlink.net. And anytime, that's an open invitation to any of them.
And by the way, Knopf is with silent K, K-N-O-F-F. Okay,
right.
And you can also just Google Project Achieve, or I'm sure you can Google Howie Enough and get that.
Yep.
Okay, so
absolutely.
Howie, be safe down there. Just keep staying in.
All right, be well, Larry. Take care.
I'm going to. We'll talk again soon. Thanks for everything. Thank you.
All right, thank you.
Okay, bye. That's Howie Enough, everybody. Again, Project Achieve, you can find it, but it's K-N-O-F-F. Okay, just so you know, the K is silent. All right, and Howie is not, and thank God for that, because that free hour that he's offering, which I didn't know is really something, just gave all of us a free hour. Okay, unbelievable. All right, we're going to archive the show over at our equity website, ace-ed.org, under Education Talk Radio Podcasts. All right, everything, and I'll take if you click through that icon, it'll grab you over to where we keep everything for this. Please, our equity consortium beckons you, okay? Our magazine, Howie's Good Writing in there, beckons you. It's all at ace-ed.org, the American Consortium for Equity in Education. My name is Larry Jacobs. Thanks, Howie. As always, everybody, you too. Stay safe.